So in the year 1647, Thomas Winder, citizen and grocer of London, instigated a sermon to be preached at the Church of St. Michael the Archangel on the Sunday nearest to Guy Fawkes Day. Each year, we invite an eminent speaker to address us on an area of contemporary concern. Our 2015 speaker is Councillor Chris Turrell. Chris Turrell is the executive member of Bracknell Forest for Planning and Transport. He was a former mayor and comes with a wealth of political experience. He will look at the subject of developing communities. Over the next decade, thousands of new homes will be built in Warfield and Bracknell. But houses don't necessarily make homes, and new developments don't automatically make communities. What are the keys to building community cohesion and avoiding social isolation? Chris Turrell will be addressing these issues in this, the 368th Winder Lecture. So without further ado, could you please give a warm Warfield welcome to Councillor Chris Turrell.
Thank you very much for that warm welcome, and thank you to all of you for turning out on a slightly calmer evening than I think some of the weather this weekend has been. Thank you for inviting me to talk to you tonight about community transformation and how it is about much more than building new houses. I should state at this point that views I express are personal and not necessarily those of Bracknell Forest Council or Bracknell Town Council. I've been on both those councils since 2000 and have been Executive Member for Planning and Transport at Bracknell Forest since 2013. My ward, Harmanswater, faced planning issues for most of the last decade when the RAF Staff College closed after many years in 2001. Its site was proposed for development into what is now known as the Parks. Today, the Parks is a 750-dwelling estate nearing completion. It has a thriving community centre, which was officially opened in June of this year, and there are 25 hectares of green space comprising woods and the Staff College's former sports ground, which will shortly become sports pitches again. It's timely to talk about the development of new communities, and not just from the Warfield perspective. Nationally, we have seen the whole question of housing shortage come up the political agenda. Where will sons and daughters of local residents live? Will they be able to afford to get on the property ladder? These are questions being asked with increasing frequency. They are not questions we can avoid, and the issue certainly resonates with younger people. All the political parties realise the need to act on the provision of housing, and it is vitally important that new housing makes not just extra houses, but new communities. But before we go further, it is worth considering some of the ways in which settlements have come about in the first place, as it does impact on how they become communities. A settlement may have developed round a feature such as a crossroads or a crossing point on a river. This may well relate to the need for food or water, materials for trade or manufacturing activity. Then there are settlements which come into being for strategic or defence reasons. The concept of such planned development is not new. Some of our new towns, such as Winchelsea or Newtown, Isle of Wight, are actually hundreds of years old. From rural diktat, we may move to landowner whim, the development of model villages such as Milton Abbas in Dorset. Or the moving of a village such as Edensor in Derbyshire because the local landowner, the Duke of Devonshire, felt this change would improve his view. The Industrial Revolution contributed hugely to the development of settlements. The exponential growth of Birmingham and Manchester from small settlements to great cities is a case in point. The railways had their influence. City life brought with it the problems of living at higher density. Disease and inadequate sanitation. It took some time to understand the connection between contaminated water and cholera, and more time for the remedy to be put in place. Birmingham was one of the leaders in providing its inhabitants with an effective sanitary system, and the lead on that was taken by local government, Birmingham City Council and its Lord Mayor, Joseph Chamberlain. In some of the newly expanded industrial settlements, the more enlightened employers realised that it was worth looking after their workers. People would be better off in housing of a good standard. Sir Titus Salt built Saltaire near his mill in Airedale, West Yorkshire, and the Cadbury family built Bourneville around their factory in Birmingham. These are examples of employer-managed model settlements. Other philanthropists, predominantly in Victorian times, realised the importance to people's health and well-being of providing public buildings, libraries, parks, and open spaces. Moving closer to our own times, we have the Garden City movement of the late 19th and early 20th century. An early example is Hampstead Garden Suburb. Later came Letchworth and Welwyn Garden City. These were the reaction to overcrowding in cities and dense building. The emphasis was on housing in generous plots with plenty of trees and greenery. The destruction of much housing in London and other major cities during World War II led to the development of new towns. In 1949, Bracknell was one of eight towns so designated. They're all approximately 30 miles from London. In the following 30 years or so, the market town of 5,000 was developed in neighbourhoods. These are a distinctive part of Bracknell's character today. By any standards, this was major change, with a large influx of people from London into the new town. It is fortunate that the neighbourhoods of Bracknell were planned with their own local shops, green spaces and community centres. The community centre buildings are owned by Bracknell Forest Council, but run by community associations of local residents. The halls are all well used, with income from many bookings subsidising the community use. Bracknell Town Council also plays a part in managing local facilities. Sports pitches, parks and play areas are the council's main activities. Along with Southfield Park and Lily Hill Park, these all contribute to the generous green space in the town, the feature most valued by its residents. Local government has changed greatly over time. It's worth looking briefly at its development. Historically, it had been piecemeal. In 1647, the time of Thomas Winder, we would have seen locally, among other things, the county town of Abingdon with its corporation, and closer to home, Reading and Wokingham with theirs. County officials had a role. The High Sheriff was responsible for law enforcement and administration of prisons. Justices of the Peace were, in addition to their judicial function, responsible for county administration, some highways and bridges. Higher up the scale, authority was in some doubt in 1647. Parliament and King Charles I were locked in civil war, and the King spent part of this year under house arrest in Scotland. Other organised bodies made their appearance in the 18th century. Turnpike trusts built new roads, improvement commissions installed street lighting or street paving, and boards of guardians managed poor relief and workhouses. Over 200 towns and cities were governed by corporations, which were frequently closed, with new members being co-opted as required. Appointments tended to be under the tight control of the local aristocracy. To gauge how different these corporations were from today, it is worth noting some of the provisions of the Municipal Corporations Reform Act of 1835. Election of councillors, meetings open to the public, regularly audited accounts. So clearly these were innovations at that time. Local government, as we now know it, started in earnest in the late 19th century. County councils and county borough councils came in 1888, followed in 1894 by urban district, rural district, and parish councils. This saw local government taking a real lead in the community, with councils providing highways and waste disposal, poor relief, housing, hospitals, water and gas works, fire stations and police. These changes raised the status of local government and encouraged central government to give it more responsibilities. It was a state of affairs which lasted for the first half of the 20th century. From then, however, local government's field of activity was gradually reduced. There was progressively more centralisation, culminating in the top-down approach seen in the first decade of this century, with central government trying and failing to impose another tier of government, regional government. In the last few years, we've seen an apparent reversal of this. We hear of thinking which is bottom-up, and the main statute embodying this is the Localism Act of 2011. There is government interest in developing the role of parish councils, and this has stimulated interest by hitherto unparished communities, notably towns, in forming parish councils. The Localism Act has also introduced a more localised form of planning policy document, the neighbourhood plan. All six Bracknell Forest parishes have some involvement in this, from considering whether to have a neighbourhood plan to submitting a plan for examination and ultimately for a referendum of those in and connected with the plan's designated area. In Bracknell Forest, the designated areas are all coterminous with the parish boundaries, but this does not have to be the case for the designated area. Nationally, there are now over 1,500 plans at some stage of a process initially billed at taking between 18 and 24 months. I think in practice it's been found to be somewhat longer. Over 100 neighbourhood plans are now made. In other words, they've been to that final stage of the process, the referendum of electors and stakeholders in the neighbourhood plan designated area. Neighbourhood plans do not have to have a comprehensive range of policies, but they do add more local policies and priorities as an extra layer of planning guidance, complementary to the local plan documents for the borough. One feature of this is that community groups get hands-on experience and involvement in plan making. Another facet of the bottom-up approach has seen a remarkable takeoff since this year's general election. The government promoted the Northern Powerhouse as a means of bringing together the local authorities in Greater Manchester to collaborate in strategic decisions. This has become more widespread as local devolution has taken off considerably and has aroused a lot of interest in the local government community. To date, there are 38 of these groupings of councils. Transfer of some power from central government is promised. It will be very interesting to see how local devolution actually develops and what results it produces in terms of economic regeneration. In some quarters, it's felt that the bottom-up approach allows freedom to communities, but only within the parameters set by central government. It would be, though, a very important step forward for this country if local devolution really did lead to greater economic development outside London and the South East, and if it were to succeed in taking the pressure for development off those areas. For pressure there certainly is, with this part of the country recently being identified for 55% of the nation's calculated housing need. The areas in prospect of development locally are set out in the Council's Site Allocations Local Plan, which was adopted by the Council in July 2013. More recently, an issue has arisen over the Council not having a five-year land supply. In other words, not having enough land which it is considered could come forward for development to take place on it within 5 years. To respond to this and to update and improve the reach of our policies, we are embarking on a new local plan to take us to 2036. To inform this, we have started collecting evidence. The whole system for local plans is evidence-based, hence the seemingly endless consultations that go on when the thing gets going. One of the early parts of this is the strategic housing market assessment, which gives a figure for housing need calculated on a widely used methodology. You may have seen this figure quoted in recent local media reports. It's 635 dwellings per annum. This is the so-called policy off figure. In other words, we have yet to apply to it any of our policy constraints. Examples of policy constraints are the Green Belt in the north and east of the borough and the special protection area in the south of the borough, which under European law provides protection for the habitat of rare ground nesting birds. Consultation on issues and options relating to the new comprehensive local plan will start next year. Another process in the Localism Act conforming to the bottom-up approach is the duty to cooperate between councils. This is intended to substitute for strategic planning, and particularly focusing on housing delivery. In presenting their local plan for examination, councils will have to show that they have consulted their neighbours and reached agreement on strategic sites. But planning plays other roles in the development of communities. Policies on density decide the grain of a new development, the ratio of gardens to housing, the appearance and scale of streets and public open space. For many years, it has been established that the developer contributes to the development of public facilities, such as schools, libraries, community halls, sports pitches, and local shops. This has been facilitated by Section 106 of the Town and Country Planning Act 1990, which has required sums in respect of these to be negotiated as part of obtaining each single planning permission. This is a time-consuming process, and the delays it causes have been criticised. That is changing. While Section 106 will still be around for some forms of development, a new system, Community Infrastructure Levy, or CIL, has been introduced. In Bracknell Forest, it came in on the 6th of April 2015. CIL is based on the square meterage of new development and on different tariffs for areas. The tariffs can vary according to land use and geography. The rates must be determined by viability, not policy. In other words, they must not be set so high as to stifle growth. Having a CIL scheme is also important for obtaining central government funding, a significant contribution to our larger infrastructure projects. It is designed to reduce the funding gap for the extra infrastructure needs arising out of new development. It has long been a criticism that new development does not take account sufficiently of the extra infrastructure needs it generates. It is still very early days to see how this radically different new system will work out in practice, not least in how effectively it addresses this problem. There is an important way in which the CIL regime allies to the bottom-up approach. A proportion of the payments is allocated by the local planning authority, Bracknell Forest Council, to parish councils for their priorities. It is 15%, or, for those with a neighbourhood plan in place, 25%. This is likely to represent a significant sum of money and makes a clear change to the role of a parish council. Where large-scale development takes place in a parish, it gives the parish council an important role in helping financially to establish a new community and to ensure some existing priorities are catered for. So, that's a look at some of the context in which the new communities of the 21st century find themselves and will find themselves in years to come, and in which they will need to develop. And it's important for all of us that they do. When the builders move off an area of new development, it is in no one's interest to have social problems move in. Councils, schools, provided a distinctive meeting place. It was also be able to used for lots of fairly straightforward things like, you know, bring and buy sales and things, and other groups, wanting a sort of have something take place at a meeting point. So I think that's the sort of thing that we've got to look at with the new town centre as it goes in, and to see how that forms. So how that helps.
Thank you. Next question. try and have your questions next door to each other, please.
You briefly touched on the problems of young people getting homes. Could you tell me what proportion of housing will be deemed affordable?
Right. The way that that's working at the moment, the existing policy is 25% affordable, 25% social housing, and within that, what we're seeing typically is within that, it's just like a 70-30 split, affordable and what's called intermediate housing. The government has plans to encourage starter homes, and these were going in the Housing and Planning Bill, which will go before Parliament next year. I think it's already started its journey in Parliament. Startup homes play a role in that. Now, we need more detail on starter homes. It has to be worked up. This primary legislation will go through next year, but there will be followed by secondary legislation that will give more detail as to how they're going to do that, how they're going to go about it. Because the aim is housing at 80% of market price for people under 40 who have not had a home, who have not had a house before. But how they achieve that, how they make it work, actually work in the marketplace, which plays a significant role, I think is going to take some working out, particularly as outside London, there's a cap of £250,000 on the price of those houses. What you have to think what you can get for £250,000, and I think that is going to give them something of a challenge. But it is certainly something that's made its way up the political agenda. I was with some sixth formers at a school in Bracknell, which covers from where they come from, places other than just Bracknell, and the topic of housing was a concern to them. They have realised the difficulty of getting on the property ladder.
We note that where the old 3M building was, that new apartments have been built there. Will any of those be on the affordable category, or are they just in the marketplace just to make sure that people move into town? And supplementary to that, with all the new shops going up, do you think that there will be extended opening hours? Because at the moment everything closes at 5:30 anyway in Bracknell, or before. So regardless of how many more shops there are to create movement of people, do you think there will be any extension of those hours to encourage people to be moving around and bring life to the town? Thank you.
Okay. Well, what was the 3M building, which 3M don't like being called the 3M building because it's Winchester House, although that's all academic now since it's gone. Outline planning permission has been given 311 flats. I don't have with me the proportion of social housing among that. To go on to your question about opening hours of shops, the stated aim of the planners is an 18-hour economy. In other words, they want to develop the evening session, and I think we'll see the arrival of a number of restaurants from restaurant chains in the town centre, and I think that will help in terms of drawing out the hours. And I would think and hope that in today's, the way things are today, that would lead to some later opening hours for shops. So that I think is a distinct possibility. That the new town centre will be open in spring 17, so we should see it, you know, around about that time. So big, you know, significant change I think there.
You spoke about the localisation. I think you said it was 2011 the law was passed. And one of the outcomes of that is these local plans. We have six parishes around Bracknell. I think that's what you said. So my first question is, what status is each of those localities in as far as a local plan? My second question is, what stage are we at in this particular parish And then my third question is, how do we get involved as Joe Public in those local plans?
Right. Well, okay, neighbourhood plans. Yeah, all six parishes are doing them. I think the furthest advanced is Binfield, which is at the submission stage. So that's getting to the stage where the Bracknell Forest Council will appoint an examiner to examine the neighbourhood plan. That examination will, most of them seem to be being done by written representations. So that's quite a late stage. Warfield isn't, I think I'm right in saying that it's the local, the neighbourhood plan process is taking a bit longer. All six parishes do have, there are different levels of interest. I mean, some like Wingfield are only just sort of embarking on it. So they're all at different stages going through that. I think probably your best bet is, I guess Colleen or some of the Warfield Parish Council might be a port of call. In terms of finding out a bit more about the Warfield neighbourhood plan. Yeah.
Okay. More questions? Can't believe we ended up behind Binfield.
It's with reference to the social isolation that is particularly on my heart. It's for people really who cannot drive, particularly the elderly, in terms of transport. Transport has hit this area quite severely this summer. It's been halved. We were threatened with losing all contact with Windsor. And we discovered that these services were actually unsupported by the local council. Have you plans to now support this service, which is a vital service to King Edward's Hospital, Heatherwood Hospital, and widely used by the community? Those who go to Windsor for work, who've used this service and seen it as a, part of the local transport, to discover it's unsupported was quite a shock. So are there plans to secure this? Because I believe that in the spring, when the winter schedules end, we might be faced with it again.
The situation with bus services, and they are very important, and they do have, they have a very strong following, small in some cases, it has to be said, but they are there. There are two types. You have the supported services where the council pays to run a service. They're basic services, and they are aimed at, they get people to food, doctors, into the town centre. It's a basic service, and it's run to fulfil that need. We do a number of those, but they're run in areas where it would not work to have a commercial service. All the others are commercial services. In other words, they're run to make a profit. What happened in the summer was that one bus operator first decided that a lot of the services they were running in Bracknell, they didn't work for them in terms of commercial services, so they pulled out. What happened then was that Courtney stepped in to fill most of the gaps. Prior to that, there had been quite a lot of duplication of services, because you basically had First and Courtney on the same ground running the same services, and a lot of the time there aren't that many passengers. So basically what happened there was that it did take out a lot of duplication, which probably makes the situation healthier for the remaining operator, Courtney, because that should make the services a bit more viable. We're watching that to see how that develops. Two difficulties came in the summer. One first decision was made very suddenly. There's a 56-day period for either the establishment or discontinuing a service to be registered with the traffic commissioners, and that was done within days of there was the minimum time to do it, and Courtney did step up to the mark in that respect, which is a bit of a leap of faith, a bit of a leap in the dark, because none of the bus operators will share their patronage figures, so they don't know anything about how many people are going to get on those buses. The other situation that we had of the routes going from Bracknell to Windsor is that there were two main buses, the 702 and the 191. And this was going to be pulled. The whole thing was going to be pulled, and the 702 service would only run to Windsor. I wrote to the managing director of First Buses and said, "This is a well-used service. On the way from Bracknell, it serves Heatherwood, it serves King Edward VII Hospital, it serves Legoland, where there are workers, shift workers, it goes into Windsor." So I said, "I think if you can't run two buses there, what you could do is make a change to the 702 route and take in those places." So that has kept some service going, and they're operating, as you say, a winter timetable. What's happened in previous years is the summer timetable has been more extensive. So we'll see what comes out, you know, in March. But I think what you'll probably find is there are a few more buses there for that service. Going forward, we have to look at the town centre and the stated aim of getting it to an 18-hour economy. And that is going to impact on bus services in terms of thinking, are there some more services that would need to be supported or encouraged to operate going into the evenings so that people can use that form of transport to get in and out of the town? And that is being looked at by the council and the bus operators. Some of the services do very well indeed. I mean, for example, the service between Bracknell and Camberley, the 94 and the 194, has two operators on it. There's Courtney and there's also Stagecoach, because they operate from Aldershot and operate a lot of services in Camberley. So that's two operators both finding there's enough there for commercial service. Another change that has been well received is with the service from Bracknell to Reading, and that's now being run by Reading buses. And you'll have seen they've brought state-of-the-art buses in there, double-decker buses, and they've made it clearer because there were slight variations in the route. So they have the 4 and they have the X4. The X4 doesn't stop at quite as many places in Bracknell. It's got a more direct route, so that makes it clearer to passengers what they could expect from that bus. But going forward, we do have, with supported services, we do have to look very carefully at who actually uses them, because basically there's money being spent on buses, and yes, it needs to provide a service, and we need to be sure that that service is actually benefiting people actually using it, because if they're not, then you know we will have to look carefully to see how we might continue doing that. And I think generally I would say about buses is that it is a good form of transport. It's there is a good network to make to the main places, and if people use them, then they have a surer future. If they're not used, then it risks commercial operators drawing away, and the council having to think carefully about what services it continues to support. So I hope that's helpful.
We've got 2 minutes worth of questions left. I'm amazed by how much you know about buses.
There've been a lot of correspondence about buses in the summer.
I picked that up, yes.
And a lot
You've
of people
asked that
are.
Question before, yeah. Yes. Going to Mike and then across the line.
Yeah, it's carrying on a little bit on the sort of the theme of the what community hubs that you're going to generate, particularly in this North Bracknell area. When you talk to the developers around here and you say, well, where are the local shops going to be? They say, don't know. And, you know, I haven't seen any of that. Can you comment on that, please? Because that's important not only to to us here to see what the variety of properties are going to be. But it's also important, I think, as a church community here, that we have often expanded our services into the community as new houses have been built, and actually put churches in some of these areas, but it's usually based around the community centre or the schools.
Yes, I'm well aware of the development of Warfield Church. Warfield Church is, because I think there's now seven churches, or is it more than that? Going out into community centres and... Right, with lots of locations, right, okay, fair enough. yes, that's important. As I said earlier, it is important for the heart of a community. So we need to pull that together, and we need to make it much clearer what is on offer there to make those points. And I'll see that we communicate that clearly when there's still some applications to come forward in terms of development. Sites and Warfield, so we need to get that clear for you, that what would be provided and where.
Hello, Chris. I'm referring to what you started to say at the end of your talk, when you said that councils and church can all contribute, and that the WI, scouts and guides all have an important role to play. As someone who lives around here, my heart bleeds when I see all the green fields being dug up for houses, but as a member of this church, I look and think, this is so exciting. All these new people coming into the area, and as a church, we passionately want to get involved and be involved. I don't wish to appear ungrateful or churlish, but my personal observation is that a lot of the community centres that you've built in the areas are quite stingy, and we have a vision and a passion for something much, much braver that really will be the heart of the community. Do you yet know with any finality what sort of community hub building is going to exist for the massive development that's coming to Warfield?
Well, we will certainly aim to make sure that it has a good centre. You're absolutely right. I mean, you know, there's all sorts of things that can be done. There are the ones in Bracknell that have come on, and it's dependent on the size of the development. I mean, for example, the one at Jennets Park, which was opened in 2011, is bigger than the one at the parks, proportionate to the size of the development. Really, I think in terms of how much Section 106 money we can get. To do it, so there are significant opportunities at Warfield, and I think it's important to get that to get that together, so that I think there is a real opportunity if the community takes off to make a really good centre and to have some really good community assets providing a strong heart there. So I think there's more to be done on that in terms of getting it together, and I think that probably the first step is literally getting to know the communities as they move in, knocking on the doors and all that kind of thing, the footwork, and then that will draw in together to help get it going and get it going sort of quickly and have a good role and be a good building. So I hope that's helpful in terms of what sort of needs to happen.
So one more question. So no pressure, but it's the final question. No pressure, but this has got to be a good question.
Hi Chris, this is a question on trains. You might not sure how good your knowledge of trains is, but okay. Just looking at Bracknell Station there, they seem to be renovating the building there, but are they actually going to be renovating the actual station itself? Because it doesn't seem to have a very nice waiting room there. It's literally freezing cold in the winter months. Yeah. And for a new town centre being built, you'd expect a better sort of station.
Yes, I'd agree with that. What's happening at the station at the moment, there's Station House, which is that large building over it, That has a planning permission for 118 flats. It's an office being converted to residential accommodation, which is a change the government introduced on a temporary basis in 2013 and which they're continuing. It has been very successful in Bracknell. It's generated 500 new dwellings or permissions, therefore, and the government residents are pleased to see empty office buildings being used for a purpose rather than just staying empty. So the government are continuing it, so that's what's happening with the building. The station underneath, we are talking to Network Rail and South West Trains because, yes, we feel strongly that there could be a better offer there, looking at things like somewhere better to wait, a bit faster to get a ticket, because if you've got more ticket machines, proper, ladies and gents would be helpful, and those facilities like that. So we have for some time been leaning on those companies or those organisations, and we will continue to do so, and hopefully get something out of them. So I hope that helps.
Thank you, Chris. That's amazing. Just dazzled by your historical knowledge of the whole thing. Really, really useful to see how it all joins together. But your local information, you've done this for a while, I guess.
Yes.
So the ins and outs. So really appreciate your coming. We will make sure all of that is put on the website as soon as possible. If you are willing to let us share the transcript, that would be even better.
I can send it to you.
That would be very, very kind indeed.
That.
So we give one more round of applause for Councillor Chris Barry.
Thank you.
Takes us to the end of the 368th Winder lecture. People keep telling me that there were gaps in between where there were periods without lectures. I'm ignoring that. It sounds so much cooler to have the 369th Winder lecture coming up very soon. Long before that, we have teas and coffees available at the back. And, of course, it's the Winder lecture night, so there is cake available as well. And I've seen some of these cakes coming in. They are not to be missed. So if you would allow me to say the briefest of grace, we will wander across and eat some cake. So, Father, bless these cakes in Jesus' name. Amen. You like that prayer? It was a good one, right? Go.